Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Is sponsored.
The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Now, for the debate last night, number one, everybody is calling Joe Biden the winner. Everybody's wrong. Biden said nothing. Somebody call me with one substantive policy that he had last night, one thing that he was going to do, other than Barack Obama, Barack Obama, Barack Obama, and he invented everything. I thought his performance was embarrassing. Did somebody else watch this debate? The laziness of my peers is unbelievable. It's easy to sit there and say Biden won the debate because he didn't look like a tottering old man, and he screamed into the microphone and pointed his finger. Guy said nothing. He said nothing. This is a guy that's been there 50 years. He has no accomplishments. Zero. Done nothing. And he said nothing last night. And Klobuchar was mocking him, shaking her head and rolling her eyes like, what the hell are you talking about? Bernie Sanders, everybody said, got beat last night. Wrong. Sanders did fine. Sanders is the front runner. Nobody laid a glove on him. Yeah, the Cuba thing, but look, he doubles down. He defended it. And he went right back at the audience. And then what he said after on the debate spin, he's like, look, to get a ticket here, you got to pay $1,750. That's not my base. You know, Stan says Biden won by hiding in the shadows and saying I'm still alive. I guess we'll find out Saturday. I don't think Biden won the debate. I think Biden's going to get beat on Saturday. Why would you vote for Biden if you're in South Carolina? What motivation do you have to get up on a Saturday and vote for Joe Biden? What motivation? Zero. He's going to lose. And folks, I never get this stuff wrong. Biden's dead. He's going to get beat. On Saturday, you remember this conversation we're having. He will get beat by Sanders on Saturday, and he will be out of the race, because after that, there's nowhere for him to go. This is what the pundits miss, because it's obvious to say, oh, he was a winner because he didn't look like a complete moron. All right, so Sanders, I would say, Stan, the opposite. I would say Sanders won by not losing. Sanders is the front runner. Nobody really laid a glove on him. I mean, they tried, and yeah, he got a little testy, but that testiness is what his base wants. You know, it reminds me of the first Republican debate in Cleveland where Trump got challenged on not signing that stupid pledge. Remember that pledge? That was like the big thing, the pledge to support the other candidates, and Trump wouldn't sign it. And they hammered him with it, and he shrugged his shoulders, and he said, I'm not signing crap. And his base went crazy because his base, like Sanders, didn't care about the party. They wanted to burn it down if he was not the candidate. This is what all the pundits miss. The enemy to the Bernie Sanders vote base is the DNC establishment. And if their guy's not going to get the nomination, they want to blow it up. And I agree with that. So I don't think that Biden is going to win, and I don't think he won the debate. Okay, now let's go down the line. Where the hell is Elizabeth Warren going with this? She keeps blasting Bloomberg. She's in the middle of the pack in every single poll. She's at 14%. She's going nowhere. She blasts Bloomberg again and refuses to say one bad thing about Bernie Sanders other than she gets things done and he doesn't, which is, it's kind of milquetoast. So where's she going with this? I said this a week ago and she did it again. Her job is the attack dog to take down Bloomberg so that it's Sanders Warren. That's what she's angling for. And she doesn't care if Sanders gets beat, because then good luck beating her in 2024. All these people have an angle. She knows she's not going to be the nominee. The only way she's a nominee is if they go to Milwaukee with an open convention. Sanders can't get there, and they turn to her because Sanders' supporters finds her palatable. That's her play. That's why she doesn't go after Sanders. Leslie in Chesapeake says, Biden will look like an angry white man. I agree with that totally. I yelling into the microphone makes no sense to me. Now, as far as the debate, I got a couple texts here saying, so somebody texts in, looks like Abigail in Virginia Beach says, on the debate, you're wrong, it sucked. Well, I mean, I have a different perspective. I like when people engage, and I think the worst debates is when you end up with these pillow fights. So, look, it's a tough thing to do to keep it manageable, but I thought the most fun was when they were yelling at each other. I thought it was entertaining, right? I did make popcorn. I actually got up out of my chair when they were yelling at each other. I said, I got to make some popcorn. This is too good. So let me tell you who I thought was a big winner last night after I gave you my disclaimer. I thought Michael Bloomberg was the huge winner last night. Unquestionably, Bloomberg won this debate. Now, why? Number one, he was better than he did a week ago, even though that was so bad that if he just showed up and said nothing, he'd do better. But secondly, the guy actually had a record to run on. Actually had a record. His record on education in New York City was indisputable. Even though they mocked him on the, what was it, the Big Gulp or the trans fat, life expectancy went up. He defended charter schools. He defended not completely legalizing marijuana. I mean, he defended capitalism last night. Now, he took a shot from Warren. And look, here's what the guy should never do is be a stand-up comic. Every joke he told was, it was so bad. I mean, some people just can't tell a joke. You just can't do it. I mean, I think he had three or four attempts. All of them were, ever tell a joke and it just is flat and you're kind of embarrassed by it? That was Bloomberg last night. So get off the jokes, you can't do it. But I thought Bloomberg last night at the end of that debate was the adult in the room. Now, maybe the party's not going to go for him. I don't know. I think he wins Virginia. It's like I think Sanders wins South Carolina. I think Bloomberg wins Virginia handily. He's got a huge operation here on the ground. But I thought Bloomberg won the debate. And this is a dangerous candidate. I would rather go up against any of these candidates except Bloomberg. Because I don't know if he can rally the Democratic base, but I can tell you this. Anybody that doesn't like Trump's style, I mean, this guy is not going to destroy the economy. And you saw that last night. There was a level of maturity that he had that the others simply, even if they had it, they couldn't display it. Biden yelling into the microphone, gibber. It was all gibber. I mean, the Biden performance last night was a pot of gibberish. Text me 757-692-1710 without going on the internet and give me one thing that you remember that he actually said other than he's been working for black people for since 1929 or something. And then on some of the post-debate analysis, one of the people called him out and said, what exactly has the guy done? And I've got that clip coming up. So, look, I think Bloomberg was the big winner last night. Biden, I guess he did okay. I don't think it's enough. I think he gets beat. And I think Sanders wins by not losing. Mayor Pete is there, but there's no there. I mean, if you're going to vote for the moderate, you're going to vote for Bloomberg. There's no there. What's Pete going to do? Bring everybody together and Bernie sucks. Okay, I get it. And I thought Tom Steyer had a good night, only because he's saying, you know, these guys can't win. You got a Republican and a socialist. That's always a good line. So that's my take on it. I think South Carolina Saturday night, what is this, Wednesday? Sanders is going to win South Carolina Saturday night. His people are going to turn out. Biden's not going anywhere. He's going to lose. That's going to be the end of his campaign. And then you're going to go into Super Tuesday, and Bernie's going to get – a boatload of delegates in Texas and California, and it goes down to Sanders Bloomberg. John Fredericks, Radio Network. Joining us now from Chicago, Sheriff David Clark, America's Sheriff. He was just on the Steve Bannon Show the other day, live in the historic Breitbart Embassy. He's back with us by phone in the Midwest. Sheriff Clark, great to have you, sir.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Okay, let's get your analysis of the debate last night. Winners, losers, overall analysis.
Winners, none. Losers, take your pick. Any of the candidates that was on the stage there had their moment of incredibility, I guess. It's political cannibalism now in the Democrat Party. Things are starting to take shape. There's no doubt about that. Yes, Sanders is the front runner. I still think there's a long way to go. Warren, like you said, just hanging on. Biden's on life support. I think it's time to pull the plug. We'll find out after Saturday. I think the South Carolina primary is Saturday.
Yes, sir.
And his lead is not widening. His lead is shrinking.
Yeah.
With Sanders surging, so we'll see what happens there. Buttigieg, she's just hanging around. Just hanging around.
See, you've been saying that. He's just hanging around. He did good last night. But I guess my question is, what states are you going to win? I mean, you have to now win states, right?
Yeah.
You just can't get – I mean, unless you're Warren, who needs 300 delegates – and if Bernie is short by 400, then she makes the deal. I totally get that. You know, those of us that – and look, Sheriff, I mean, you were in politics a long time. You get this, right? So Warren can't win outright, so she's vying for VP. Well, Pete's not going to be anybody's VP, certainly not going to be Bernie's VP. So Pete's got to win a state, and there's no states out there where he's competitive. Right now, he's in the 10 to 15%. He's going to get some delegates, but he can't win a state. So I don't get where he's going. Unless a lot of these guys are just positioning themselves for, I guess, if Biden's the VP, maybe the president, the nominee, maybe Pete would be the VP.
Biden's not going to be anything. You know, as for Buttigieg, the thing with him is, you know, he's an empty suit. What does he stand for? He has no convictions. He has no core in terms of, you know, here's what I stand for, and here's what I'll do for the country, and here's where I'll lead the country. He doesn't really come out strong in any of that stuff. He knocks and mocks a lot of the things that the others are saying, not in a very aggressive way, and that's why I term he's just hanging around. But keep this in mind. I think Buttigieg is only, 38 years old? I mean, why shouldn't he stay in? He's got the money.
Right.
He might be positioning himself for 4 years from now.
Right. Right.
Think about it. It's going to be an open seat, right?
Right. It's going to be no incumbent. And you can only, when Trump wins again, Sheriff, you can only imagine what you saw going on last night is going to be a water gun fight as opposed to what's going to happen in a Republican primary in 2024 when once again the RNC operatives are in there battling to get their party back from the America firsters like you and I, and it is going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, I mean, people were asking back in 2015, 2016, what's Kucinich doing? What's he hanging around for? What is he trying to do here? But anyway, Buttigieg is trying to frame himself now. I said he doesn't, you don't know what he stands for, but at least you know his name. Before he entered this, most people couldn't pronounce his name. Now he's become a household name. So at 38 years old, the future is what he's thinking about. But, you know, here's my guess. And my guess is no better than anybody else. I want to make that clear. If this goes to a brokered convention, and I'm not so sure it will, but if it does, the candidate that comes out with the nomination will not be from this group. All right? I don't think the Democrat Party, the DNC, I don't think the Democrat operatives are happy with any of these people. Any of them. And I think what will happen, like I said, just a guess, okay, not my opinion, just a guess, if this thing comes to Milwaukee as a brokered convention, The person who walks out of here as a Democrat nominee will not be from this group that's on stage last night.
Sheriff, how do they do that? I mean, how do you parachute your way into Milwaukee where you got all these people going through this meat grinder, running around the country exhausted, getting delegates, raising money, you know, 10 debates, and then you turn to somebody that was not in the fray? How do you do that?
Oh, you do it very easily. It's a Democrat party, okay? They do some crazy stuff. It's the party of the crazy right now. But here's what they have to fear more than anything else. If they try to wrestle this thing away from Bernie Sanders, Bernie Sanders will run a third-party campaign and destroy any chance of the Democrats winning in November. He will out of spite, and he's got a lot of supporters. He's got enough that if he peels off, there's no way a Democrat can win. So they got to handle him with kid gloves. They got to be real careful with Bernie in terms of if they're going to try to muscle him out of here. So this is going to be fascinating to watch, but it's a civil war right now, political cannibalism. Mm-hmm. You know, I termed this thing back in the spring of last year. I termed it a clown show. That's what it is, a clown car. We're seeing it play out that way. It's kind of entertaining, but at the same time, this is some serious stuff. It's supposed to be anyway. You know, potential president of the United States could come out of this clown show over here.
And I love when you call it a clown car. It always makes me laugh. Because
that's what it is. So, you know, Joe Biden last night, you know, I'm reading this thing here on one of the reviews of the debate. Joe Biden mentioned that 150 million Americans have been killed by gunfire since 2007.
Okay, let's play this clip. Hang on. Okay, Sheriff, we got to play. Kerry, get to cut eight. And, of course, I came on before you were on at 6 a.m., Sheriff, and I said that everybody is saying that Joe Biden had a good night, and I thought it was a disaster, and I think he's going to get beat in South Carolina because the guy makes no sense. Just because you get up and scream into a microphone and point your finger, the guy is a disaster, right? Everything he says is ridiculous. So if you listen to what he said, he got crushed last night. It's sad to see what's happened to him. But let's go to cut eight. This is a classic, Kiara. Cut eight. Biden claiming everybody's dead. Cut eight.
Because I'm the only one that ever got it done nationally. I beat the NRA twice. I got assault weapons banned. I got magazines that could not hold more than 10 rounds in them. I got them eliminated, except we had a thing called an election with hanging chads in Florida, and it was not reauthorized. In addition to that, I passed the Brady Bill with waiting periods. I led that fight. But my friend to my right and others have, in fact, also given to the gun manufacturers absolute immunity. Imagine if I stood here and said, we give immunity to drug companies. We give immunity to tobacco companies. That has caused carnage on our streets. 150 million people have been killed since 2007 when Bernie voted to exempt the gun manufacturers from liability. More than all the wars, including Vietnam, from that point on. Carnage on our street. And I want to tell you, if I'm elected and I'm coming for you and gun manufacturers, I'm going to take you on and I'm going to beat you. I'm the only one who's done it.
So,
and that's incredible. Did you hear the applause?
I mean, it's like the guy's nuts.
Did you hear the applause? You know, I think Hillary Clinton was right, and this was attributed to a book by Dick Morris where she said, look, the average Democrat voter is just plain stupid. They're easy to manipulate. That's the easy part. You know, and that's exactly what she was talking about. 150 million. You'd think when he said that, there would have been a little murmur in the crowd, like, oh, what's he talking about? Oh,
they cheer.
They cheer at the end, 150 million people. But, you know, and then you got Liz Warren, like you mentioned, talking about the abortion thing, you know, where she was fired from a job because she was pregnant.
It's not true. It's not true. In fact, everybody that they have contacted in that school system, like everybody said she made it up. They didn't fire her. She decided to leave and go have her baby. That was her choice. School was over. Yeah. She was pregnant in May. And she decided she was a couple months pregnant. She decided to have her baby and not teach the next semester. Everybody said it was her choice. I mean, she just makes this stuff up. And she's still making up. Or with Sheriff David Clark, America's sheriff also, David, is a board member of WeBuildTheWall.us. Just wanted to tell you this. If you want to go to one of the Bernie things, venue change, Bernie Sanders to hold rallies in Virginia ahead of Super Tuesday. Due to overwhelming response, they say, rallies in Richmond and Northern Virginia move to larger venues. Representative Ilhan Omar is to join Bernie Sanders in Northern Virginia on Saturday. Representative Omar. Oh, goody. All right, let's play this clip for Sheriff Clark. It's not fair, Sheriff. We're just having too much fun with the clown car. Here's Biden and Klobuchar. This is a classic. Amy was like, what the hell are you talking about? Cut six.
I wrote that bill. Along with, you didn't write that bill.
I wrote that bill. I wrote the bill, the Violence Against Women Act,
that
took
you did that
out of the hands of people who abused
her. Let's look at the fact check. Goodness.
The only thing that the boyfriend loophole was not covered. I couldn't get that covered. You, in fact, when you were as a senator, tried to get it covered, and Mitch McConnell is holding up on his desk right now, and we're going to lose the Violence Against Women Act across the board.
Okay, so if I could finish. I have the bill. Anyone can check it out to close the boyfriend loophole. Also, to close the Charleston loophole is another bill that's out there, universal background checks. But let me say how we win this. We've got to win in the middle of the country. And while everyone talks about winning rural areas, suburban areas, I'm the only one up here with the receipts that has actually repeatedly, while being for the assault weapon ban, won in Republican congressional districts over and over again, including Michelle Bachmann's district.
Well, Sheriff, she has a point, don't you think?
No, I was just listening to that, and I was saying to myself, out of that whole group of crazies there, she's the only one that can at least make a point and at least sound, put a sentence together and sound reasonable. Joe, he's just throwing stuff out there now. It's amazing how he just makes stuff up on the fly and he tries to sound convincing. I think it's kind of sad. He's, what do they say, a few fries short of a happy meal. I really do. But this is all they have to offer. And they weren't prepared coming out of the gate in terms of, over the last 4 years, they spent too much time trying to redo or undo the 2016 election instead of trying to groom a candidate with a vision, have a platform, a party plank with a vision for America. They spent all of the last 3+ years trying to remove Donald Trump. And so this is what they're left with now. Have you seen anybody more stiff than Michael Bloomberg, for heaven's sakes? I mean, the guy is just... He lives in a bubble, and he's been made to come out of that bubble now. I knew that would happen once he was forced. He didn't want to be in these debates.
Yeah, he didn't want
to. He was getting a lot of pressure. He was getting a lot of pressure about sitting on the sidelines, running all these ads, $430 million worth of ads to try to frame himself, to try to, give himself an image that is totally false of what he says in those ads. He's got actors playing. I worked for Michael Bloomberg. It's a radio ad. That person doesn't identify themselves. They don't say, I'm John Johnson and I was in the office of the mayor. They just say, I worked for Michael Bloomberg, but I've never worked for a nicer guy. You don't even know who's saying it, but we'll see. I'm looking forward to Saturday.
Can we agree that he has no future as a stand-up comic? I mean, he tried to tell at
See
least
that?
Three
you got
jokes.
A bigger
as...
laugh. You
oh my
a bigger
God.
Laugh out of me saying that than he got trying to be one, but go ahead.
No, he tried to tell three jokes last night. All of them were like a complete disaster, like he can't deliver a punchline. So it was like embarrassing. Like, ever try to tell a joke and nobody gets it and they like stare at you and you're like, okay, that didn't go over well. He tried it three times, but that was pretty funny. All right, I got to go. We're out of time, Sheriff. It's great to have you on, man. We'll see you in a couple days. John Fredericks, Radio Network, Truck the Truth across the...
Talk Radio. AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Washington State health officials say a second person has died in the U.S. from coronavirus. This story is just developing. Health officials in the Dominican Republic and France have reported the first confirmed cases of the new coronavirus in the tourist-rich Caribbean. Dominican Public Health Minister said Sunday that a 62-year-old Italian man was being treated in isolation at a military hospital and has not shown serious complications. Democrat Pete Buttigieg ending his campaign for president. Three people with knowledge of Buttigieg's decision tell the Associated Press he's informing campaign staff they were not authorized to speak publicly and requested anonymity. His campaign says Buttigieg is speaking in South Bend, Indiana. Buttigieg rose to the field's top tier but failed to notch enough wins in the critical early states necessary to keep his bid moving forward. This is SRN News.
I have done over 400 male-female hours. We've talked about marriage, kids, dating, intimacy, fidelity, the truths about what a woman needs, what a man needs. These segments have literally saved marriages. All that's true. The folks at the Prager Store have compiled every male-female hour we have ever done since 2010. For a limited time, the complete collection is 50% off in the Prager Store. This collection also includes every segment with my friend and relationship expert, Alison Armstrong. Plus, as a bonus, the Prager Store is including my three lectures on marriage, Thoughts on Marriage, Marriage and Divorce, and Life, Love, and Marriage. It's a $200 value for free. It's all available as a download or on a flash drive or on an MP3 player. Go to PragerStore.com. PragerStore.com. PragerStore.com, a candy store for the mind.
Are you searching for a church where the music and the message are God-honoring? Do you want to hear expository preaching with verse-by-verse presentation of God's Word? If you have said yes to these questions, then you are invited to worship at First Conservative Baptist Church, located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, just 1 mile south of I-295. Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor, founder, invites you to worship.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with a computerized wave ventilation unit. Wave ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins that are trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. Wave ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty or filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars each year in energy costs.
I recently installed a unit and was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. Now, the smell is finally gone.
Say goodbye to your dehumidifier and get a wave unit for your home.
For free information, go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE. Satisfaction guaranteed. Just go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
Everybody have a good week and stay warm. We'll be ready to go Monday morning, 6 a.m. right here on Talk Radio, WBOB, Ed Dean, Roger Henderson. Everything leads to Super Tuesday after the South Carolina primary. Roger, it's going to be interesting to see where all the Dems go.
South Carolina before that, and I think Biden's going to do well there. If he does well there, he's probably going to do well in Super Tuesday.
Yay, good analysis. We'll have more coming Monday morning, 6 to 9 a.m. Ed Dean, Roger Henderson right here on Talk Radio, WBOB.
I told you never to interrupt me while I'm working.
Join the live Twitter discussion.
I'm Twittering. Did you get my tweets? I just quoted all over the place.
Follow John Fredericks at JF Radio Show.
The Trump administration sent to Capitol Hill last night a $2.5 billion supplemental budget request for additional money to fight the coronavirus, but House Democrats immediately labeled it as insufficient, indicating a battle ahead in Congress over the emergency aid. The administration's request would require enhanced authority to move around federal funds, a non-starter with Democrats who are already livid over White House moves to reshuffle existing funds toward the border wall. The package proposes using untouched money, including hundreds of million dollars in fiscal 2020 cash to fight Ebola. In total, the administration is seeking $1.25 billion new funding, relying on extra flexibility to unlock the rest. More than $1 billion of this money would go towards vaccine development. The other funds would go towards stockpiling protective equipment like masks, according to the Office of Management and Budget. While the money is meant to be spent in 20, the request contains language that would allow the spending to continue through 2021 if needed. I quote, the Trump administration continues to take the spread of COVID-19, that's the coronavirus disease, very seriously. This from Rachel Semmel, a spokesperson for OMB, in a statement. Today, the administration is transmitting to Congress a $2.5 billion supplemental funding plan to accelerate vaccine development, support preparedness and response activities, and to procure much-needed equipment and supplies. We're also freeing up existing resources and allowing for greater flexibilities for response activities. House Democrats, though, took no time in rejecting the request. Appropriations Chair Nita Lowey of New York calling it woefully insufficient. Lowey and others have warned the White House against siphoning funds from other health initiatives to fight the coronavirus, urging the Trump administration to seek new emergency funding instead. She goes on to say, despite urgent warnings from Congress and the public health community, the Trump administration took weeks to request these emergency funds, Lowey said in a statement. It's profoundly disturbing that their answer now is to raid money Congress has designated for other critical public health priorities. Worse still, their overall request still falls short of what is needed for an effective government-wide response. House Democrats will move quickly to enact a robust package that fully addresses the global emergency without allowing this administration to steal from other necessary programs. Here's the answer. Sign whatever the hell they send up. I don't care what they send up. We have a $22 trillion debt. And now we're arguing about $1 billion for a virus that could destroy the economy. Sign whatever they send and add $1 billion. That's my response. The Trump administration playing around with moving funds, trying to save a dime someplace, is insane. If this coronavirus spreads to the U.S. and Trump is negotiating funding, who do you think is going to get blamed for this? Trump. This is one of those things where you sign whatever they send up and then add on. And whatever they send, say it isn't enough. Add on another billion. We have a $22 trillion deficit. What the hell's the difference? The money now has become monopoly money. Nobody can even figure out how much money we owe. It's in the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. You can't find enough zeros. Oh, this is a winning issue for Democrats. Trump's instincts should be good enough. Get rid of the green eyeshade crowd and sign whatever it is they send over. Ask them to send it over today. Sign it and then add $1 billion. And don't raid the other funds. Something happens to something else, they'll blame them for that. You're in an election cycle. One thing can derail your campaign and elect Bernie Sanders, the socialist president. You know what it is? An insufficient response to this. Like George Bush and FEMA. Good job, Billy Boy, whatever the guy's name, Brownie or some nonsense. This is the stuff that nails you. Government response to hurricanes, disasters, floods, tornadoes, viruses, sickness, plague. The federal government response nails you. So why we're arguing with the Democratic Congress about what money to send, and that now is the debate, and there's no argument, there's no way to go on TV and say, well, you know, we want to save $1 billion here and $100 million there. What? People are scared to death of getting sick and dying. So forget that, dude. I don't need 8 hours of analysis here. And I don't need 25 clips. He needs to sign whatever they ask. In fact, I would have not even put up a number. I would have gone to them and said, give me a number and I'll sign it. Nancy, give me a package. I'll sign it. If they took money from the border wall temporarily, I'd have signed that. What's the difference? You got to stop this thing in its tracks. And you got to shut down the borders. And see, once you sign their package and you want to close the borders, they can't say anything. What are they going to say? Well, we don't want to deny people illegal entry into the country, even though they might bring the virus in, even though we just spent another $5 billion on it of taxpayer money. You take all their arguments away. Now, Obama requested $6.2 billion in 2014 to fight Ebola. Trump should have requested $8 billion. What's the difference? You're in an election cycle. Who on earth is advising Trump? Who made this advisement? It is stupid. Coupled with the fact, it's the wrong thing to do. You don't know how big this thing is. You have no idea what impact on the economy it's going to have. No one knows. Steve Bannon does an hour show on it a day, 11 to noon. War room pandemic. We have no idea how big this is. The Chinese communist regime has lied to the world from day one. No one knows. All of a sudden, you got 350 people in Italy got it. Where'd they get it? No one knows that either. They went from 3 to 350 in a weekend. This thing is transmitted through breathing. The 350 can turn into 35 million in a heartbeat. I'm telling you, man, whoever is advising the president on this is moronic. Trump's emergency funding request also far short of what some public health experts and former administration appointees had deemed necessary. Chris Meekins, a Raymond James analyst and former Trump administration HHH official, had called for $15 billion, arguing that $3 billion was needed for vaccine development alone. Do it! I'm for $15 billion. Now, the Democrats, if this thing spreads to the U.S., it is going to sink the Trump re-election campaign like that. Doesn't matter what the economy is. It sinks it in one day. So why are you screwing with this? Better safe than sorry. The money that we waste on garbage, money on doing scientific studies of ostriches in mating season or whatever the hell we do, cut that. Do the $15 billion. What they should have sent over was a $15 billion package. Or let the Democrats do it. Hey, what do you guys think? $20 billion? Fine, I'll sign it. Sounds like a good plan to me. And then try to execute it for the safety of the American people. Now, this request for additional money comes in response to the growing threat of the coronavirus as the pandemic has spread to Italy, South Korea, and Japan. As soon as it hits Italy, you're screwed. That, to me, was the wake-up call. Long as it's in Asia, there's some way you can figure, you know, to keep it out of the U.S., stop the flights, stop the shipments, stop the boats. Soon as you get to Italy, now you're in southern Europe. What's going to stop it from spreading to Austria, Germany, Romania? The market dropped 1,000 Monday, and it's going to keep dropping. Amid economic uncertainty, White House officials wanted to project a confident attitude. You know what? That's stupid. Well, we're only going to put $2.5 billion because we're confident this isn't bad. You know what? You can spend the $15 billion. If everything is fine, no one cares. In fact, you help the markets by giving them a confidence. You're doing everything in order to back it. We spend so much money on stupid things. Some Republicans close to the White House and some aides were calling the coronavirus a black swan, meaning they deemed it an unpredictable event with potentially severe consequences. You think? Trump continue, the advisors he has around him. I mean, who is advising him? Mulvaney? This virus, no one knows what this is. First it was from a snake, then it was from a bat. Now that's debunked. No one knows. This virus has infected over 80,000 people across the world. Now, 53 are in the United States. They're confirmed to have contracted the virus almost entirely overseas. One senior administration official said the White House felt good about this level of containment, praising the president early on for suspending travel to and from China, even as he attempted to maintain good relationship with dictator Xi Jinping. I don't call him president, dictator. That's what he is. The markets do not like uncertainty, and coronavirus is uncertainty. We're confident the fundamentals of the U.S. economy remain strong, piped in an unnamed Trump official. Well, you're an idiot. You're a moron. Because you don't know what this is. And why you would give the Democrats the political upper hand on this virus is insanity. You put yourself in a lose. If nothing happens, you can't claim credit. If something happens, Bernie Sanders is president. Why would you risk this over $10 billion? Plus, it makes sense. You want a vaccine. So spend whatever it takes. Who cares? We're broke anyway. We're bankrupt anyway. John Frederick's radio network. You know, you need me to just tell you what the hell is going on here on a daily basis. So you're not, you turn off Fox and you're going to get their nonsensical echo chamber spin. I give you the truth. Thanks for tuning in. All right, Adam, we got a lot to talk about. Adam Kennedy, senior advisor to the president in the White House. Thanks for joining us today, Adam. And sorry, I'm having a good time with this. The president's trip in India, I mean, it seemed to have gone really well. We got another trade deal on the table. Can you elaborate a bit?
Well, yeah, I think this is really a trip about the close relationship between India and the United States. You know, the president has spoken often about how he feels about Modi and how close that relationship is. And particularly when we're in a stage now where we're trying to have closer economic ties, we're trying to have closer national security ties, I think this trip really highlights just how good the foundations of this relationship is and how much the president appreciates it.
Well, you know, he has a great relationship with Prime Minister Modi, who also believes in putting India first and putting Indians first. Tell us a little bit about some of the dialogue that went on there and how this might lead to a broader bilateral trade agreement.
Well, I think the president's discussed in the past about how he sees some of the tariffs in India and how he wants to make sure the trade relationship between our two countries is on an even playing field, as he does with all of our allies, by the way, whether it's the UK, the EU, India, Japan, South Korea. He wants reciprocal and fair trade, and he wants to make sure we get there with India. He sees a good partner in Modi, Prime Minister Modi, and part of this trip was trying to advance that further down so that we're able to get that and we can open up the Indian market to more American goods.
The rally, tell us a little bit about this rally they had. I guess it was on Monday. I get mixed up with the days, right? Monday, their time or our time. But 100,000 people there screaming and cheering. I mean, we never had 100,000 people at a rally.
Well, and this was fantastic. So first they had a rally here in the United States. Now they've had one in India. It shows how much the Indian community supports President Trump. I mean, this was really something else. I mean, they basically filled a whole brand-new cricket stadium for President Trump. I mean, this was it was really spectacular to watch.
The president's objectives when he went to India, tell us what they were going in and what he's accomplished coming back today.
Well, I think the biggest things was to reaffirm the relationship with Prime Minister Modi and with India in general, and to make sure that our two countries, which are close allies, remain so and continue to advance both our national security objectives and our trade relationship. And I think all those things have been accomplished. I think the whole world now sees just how close allies we are with India and how close that relationship is.
All right, Adam Kennedy, live White House, Deputy Assistant to the President, Deputy Director of White House Communications. Adam, coronavirus, the president emergency funding asking for about $2.7 billion. The Democrats come back, blast it, say it's insufficient, isn't enough. One former Trump administration official in HHS says it should be $15 billion. The Democrats are saying the other funds shouldn't be raided. What is your response to all this?
Well, I think the president has shown remarkable leadership on coronavirus from the very beginning. It was the president who made early decisions that protected this country and that continue to protect this country, whether it's making sure that everybody coming from highly infected areas are screened and are monitored, have to go through quarantine if necessary, of making sure that no one travels from certain areas anymore. It was this president who set the tone and who set the lead. He put forward a responsible supplemental request for funds, and I think it's remarkable that the Democrats are now complaining about it when they had all this time to propose any sort of funding on their own if they wanted to, but they didn't do that. This president put forward a proposal. Of course they're going to criticize it. They criticize everything this president does, no matter how good or beneficial it is for the American people.
So going forward, how do you see the White House responding to the Democrats, which are obviously going to put in a bill for more money?
We're going to continue to monitor the situation. We put forward a responsible request. If they want to put forward a different request, we're happy to talk to them and negotiate about it. But let's be clear. This president has been the one that's leading the way on it. And for Chuck Schumer or anybody else to come in and try to kind of sideline the president just isn't going to work. We've had a policy in place from the beginning that has been effective, that has been working, and it will continue to work as we go forward.
What about restricting flights from China? We're still getting flights coming in and out. Is there any consideration in the administration to just restrict all China travel?
Well, we've made sure to target the most highly affected areas. That was a big step on our part. Most countries didn't do that. Other countries didn't do that. WHO actually criticized us for it, but I think now people are seeing just how good that policy was. We'll continue to monitor the situation, and if action warrants, we'll be sure to take it.
Anything else that has come to light that you might want to share that has to do with this pandemic situation, Adam?
Well, I think that there is still more to monitor, more to look at. We saw a spike in people with the coronavirus in Italy and South Korea and some other countries. But the United States has really been at the forefront of protecting their citizens and making sure we have things in place so that we are able to handle this crisis. And that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly how the president is treating it.
All right, and going forward with the president's agenda, he was complaining in his trip to India that the Democrats haven't done anything. I want to get to prescription drugs for a second, and then I know your time is valuable. We'll let you go. The president's saying, look, I'm ready to sign something. I'm ready to get something done on prescription drugs. But the bill that the Democrats passed is basically government-set pricing, which is going nowhere in the Senate. Is there a way to just meet with Pelosi and get a bill that McConnell will actually sign, that the president can sign, on prescription drugs, which is on the mind of everybody?
Well, what's been remarkable is the president has been asking Pelosi and the Democrats to come to the table over this for months, if not years, and they continue to refuse to do that. Instead, they try to placate their far left wing. They try to essentially play to the stands instead of actually working on this priority for the American people. The president has continued to take action and will continue to take action, but Congress needs to act. Pelosi needs to put aside this partisanship and actually work with the president. Hopefully they'll do that. Hopefully now that the farce of impeachment has ended, they'll realize that they're not going to unseat this president, that they're going to have to work with him.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt there. They're not getting anything done. He calls them the do-nothing Democrats for a reason. They get nothing done. We'll see how it plays out. Adam, so now that I got kicked out of the White House Correspondents Association, am I still going to get to go to the White House? Can I still go to the press conferences, or should I wear this like a badge of honor?
You know, I don't know the rules of the Correspondents Association.
There's no rule. They have no authority over anything. It's simply an association. So it was a rhetorical question. I'm going to wear the fact. I have a hard pass that I've earned through my hard work over a very long time. And so I'm going to tweet it out and wear it like a badge of honor. John Fredericks, Trump supporter. By the way, I'm a national delegate to the convention. You can't talk about that. That's politics. I'm just saying it. Don't engage. I've already won my race because I had no opposition in my district. And so I'm going to wear that like a badge of honor. John Fredericks kicked out of the White House Correspondents Association for being a pro-Trump unabashed supporter. Kicked out. Unbelievable. Thank you. I'm looking forward to my refund, Adam.
I can imagine. I hope you spend it wisely.
You're listening to The John Frederick Show. Common sense for the Commonwealth. On great radio stations across Virginia and online anytime at thejohnfrederickshow.com.
February 29th, 2008. Today is Leap Day, which adds one additional day to the calendar year. The extra calendar day is added every 4 years and has been since 46 BC. On this day in 1940, Gone with the Wind wins 8 Oscars, including Best Picture, at the Academy Awards ceremony in Los Angeles. 1960, the first Playboy Club, featuring waitresses clad in bunny outfits, opens in Chicago. 1904, bandleader Jimmy Dorsey is born in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania. Also born on this day, rapper Ja Rule and actors James Mitchell and Dennis Farina. Today in history, February 29th, John Belmont, the Associated Press. Senorita Stay.